20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. If you are to tune into any random episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, for obvious reasons, the most likely episode that you will get is one with me in it. And the most likely episode that you will get after that is one with Ross Uglum in it. The second most episodes of all time is Ross Uglum. But there are very few times that you will find an episode of Ross and I actually together on the same podcast, which I'm very excited about today. We don't do it often enough. Of course, you can find him on social media at Ross Uglum, over on PackerReport.com, and right here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast as well. Ross, it's great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. Kind of in the dead period here. You know, there's your... The last podcast I did, I went through a couple thoughts, and then it was just like, mailbag. And I know that's the cop-out, but it's like, I need to know what people want to know more than I need to just make something up on my own, because it's slim pickings right now.
It is. It's an interesting time of year always. A lot of listicles usually this time of year. And a lot of just kind of getting prepared for training camp, looking back at the off season. We're going to go through some of that stuff today. But there's one thing that I wanted to start off with, because you are, I think, basically expert number one on the topic, and that is Christian Watson. You've obviously had the opportunity to cover him in college, and then, of course, as a Green Bay Packer as well. He's been a very integral part of this Packers roster when healthy. Of course, that caveat is definitely worth noting. He now has the torn ACL, MCL, although we've seen him out there running already, which is a very positive sign. Let me start by asking you this. For what I know this is an impossible question to answer to begin with, but what should we sort of expect from a time frame for Christian Watson from here on out? And maybe more importantly than that, when he does come back, if he is Christian, like we know him to be, how important is that return for this Packers offense?
Well, I'll start with the first question. You know, I covered his recruitment. So I've known him since he was, I think, a senior in high school. And decent relationship with his family, who are obviously very active human beings on social media, good or bad. I'd say this, I truthfully don't know anything. And if I did, I would not probably share it if it didn't, you know, want to be shared. I know he's ahead of schedule. And then that's been known as a 9 to 12 month injury. Like we talked on the radio, I think last week or the week before. The gold standard is Adrian Peterson, right? I think Adrian Peterson blows out his knee in week 17, comes back ready for opening day and wins the MVP. The last running back to do so, I think he's probably won in the last 15 years. If I had to guess, like I can't imagine there's another running back MVP. Did Derrick Henry win? No, people talked about Derrick Henry winning.
I know Barry Sanders tied with Brett Favre. That's the only other one that comes to mind off the top of my head.
And that's a side tangent that doesn't need to be gotten into, but that's the gold standard, right? Very similar injury time. That is like the freak show stuff. And while Christian has had terrible injury luck, freak show status is certainly applicable. I mean, he is one of very, very, very few human beings that move like he does. His body's not similar to even NFL players. I mean, he's a 99th percentile athlete in every sense of the word. So I think you really need to focus on two things. I have convinced myself now, and whether that's healthy or not, I have convinced myself that the new timeline is as soon as he's eligible to come off the pup. So that would be missing the first 6 weeks. I think you start again mapping out how many. You know, again, 9 to 12 months is ACL. Okay, well, the early side of that would be ready for week one. And I think those are your two differences, right? You see him cutting now, gets another 6 week break before camp starts. I think those are your two avenues, right? The first avenue is the freak show avenue, where all of a sudden it's camp and he comes off the pup. And it's like, oh my God, he's gonna play week one or week two, or They're so impressed with him. He is so ahead of schedule that he's not going to miss the first 6 weeks of the season. But I think those are your two avenues. So if he doesn't come off the pup, I am starting to believe that with where he is here in June, because off the pup, we're talking about right before Halloween. Think of how far we are from Halloween right now and what he looks like right now. I'm not a doctor, not even a PT, but what he looked like in mid-June, and you add 4 months to that, like an October 15th activation, I gotta believe that that's possible. And if it just continues this freakish like ascent, you're in Adrian Peterson territory and you're just getting activated and you're practicing in camp. And I don't know that that's where I'm willing to go, but man, that video of him cutting and I get to add 120 days to that. I just don't believe this week 10, week 11 stuff anymore.
Interesting. And I mean, that would obviously be huge for Green Bay and just what he could potentially add to that wide receiver room. And then again, that's kind of the follow-up is, if he is, again, whatever that week is, whether it's week four, week eight, whenever that is, if he's, you know, close to 100%, whatever we want to view it as, and he's Christian Watson, man, you start looking at this roster of wide receivers and you start feeling really freaking good about it because he adds so much as a blocker, as a deep threat, as a decoy. You can still use him in some gadget situations. Like, there is so many things that you can still utilize him for. And obviously just for him personally too, huge for his contract status as he's an unrestricted free agent this next year.
It's big, and I think, you know, I've said the thing that makes the most sense for both teams is a 2-year deal, probably between Christian and the Packers, just even something that they both can get out of after 1 year if Green Bay is like, oh, no, thank you, or Christian's like, man, I need to be a free agent right now. I just had my first 1,000-yard season on 70 catches and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think he just has not been replaced, and there's a lot of chatter, even frankly sort of thrown at his dad and brother during the draft about, oh man, I wonder what the Watsons think of all this. And part of that was self-inflicted because of their immediate reaction to the Matthew Golden pick, but he's not been replaced. Matthew Golden is not Christian Watson. And that's not to say like Matthew Golden can't be a better NFL player than Christian Watson or more important to the Packers of a Christian Watson or more worthy of the first round pick. It has nothing to do with that. He's 5'11". 200 pounds. And all the tape that I've watched is like, he kind of sort of tries at blocking. It's just not the same thing. And beyond that, he's not the bomber. He's not the clear out guy. Like, he can run the 4.29 all he wants. Watch the film. He's killing people in the intermediate game. Like, I saw spicy Chris Olave when I watched, not Tyreek Hill. Right. Yeah. And so he is not the clear out guy. Savion Williams is potentially Cordarrelle Patterson, especially in year one. I don't know, unless there are injuries, like how many actual targets in the passing game he gets, if any, especially if Watson comes back. If Watson comes back, I think Savion is sixth as far as actual passing game target. Now, return game, manufactured targets, handoffs, Wildcat QB, sure. But he has not been replaced. And his ability to clear out so that Romeo Doubs can run dagger in behind him and do all sorts of other things like that just with the gravity, maybe Matthew Golden can be that. Obviously, the raw, like, GPS 40-time track speed is there to do it. It's not on his college tape. Now you're going to put him in the NFL and you think he's going to draw a double team 45 yards down the field? I don't know. Maybe, but I don't know. And the funny thing is, when you watch both of them play, the most exciting thing in the world to me, like, Christian and Matthew together have a chance to be unbelievable. Agreed. Christian Watson creating space for Matthew Golden, I don't think Packers fans understand how unreal that could be.
Could be a ton of fun. That, kind of a follow-up to that as well. Let's say you're Brian Gutekunst and you know that Christian Watson's going to be back by week six at the latest. Week six is when he's going to be coming back. And I guess my question, how does that affect your decision-making with the rest of the roster at wide receiver? More basically, or more simply put, you know, you've got Mecole Hardman, Bo Melton, Malik Heath, potentially battling it out for a number six wide receiver spot to begin, you know, the regular season. are you more apt to keep just the five, knowing that Christian's going to be coming back in week six as the, you know, as another wide receiver that you're going to have six already, that you're probably going to get maybe one of those other guys back in the practice squad that can fill in from time to time for the time being? Or does it really not affect anything all that much?
I know this might sound stupid or short-sighted or whatever. I'm not even thinking about it, because I just think the odds of the entire wide receiver room making it to week six without an injury are non-existent. Not the right word, but like if I get to week seven and it's time to activate Christian Watson and all of my dudes are completely healthy and like rocking and ready to go, that's a problem I'm just willing to like deal with.
Sure.
You know, seriously, it's a problem where I just go, okay, whatever. Like, that's awesome. I guess, Bo, you're in the cornerback room now or whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to make decisions to potentially short myself at receiver, knowing that Christian can be activated in week seven, when there's a decent chance as any that somebody's going to go down between week one and week six. And is it necessarily a season long injury? No, but what if Romeo gets his head hit?
Yeah.
That could be a 2 month injury or a 3 week injury, but like, you have just no idea what's going on there. It's not like Jaden Reed has been the perfect picture of health. You really, really never know. And so I can't let that be a part of my decision-making, as short-sighted as that might seem.
No, I don't think that's short-sighted at all. I think it actually makes a ton of sense. And I think letting those decisions come when they come and not forcing anything and just, you know, keeping the best wide receivers that you can for the time being, I think it makes all the sense in the world. As we kind of move off of Christian Watson, wide receiver, obviously it would be huge again if they could get him back in earlier in the season. I think he could be such a weapon. And just like you said, even him and Golden together have the ability to be so much fun. But as we look at the rest of this Packers roster, and more specifically this offseason, question I want to ask you, we'll get to the positive side of this as well. If there's one mistake that the Packers made this offseason, maybe it's signing Aaron Banks to too much money, maybe it's not addressing a certain position, maybe it's drafting the wrong player. Well, you can go in any direction that you want. What's the mistake that the Packers made this offseason as you look back at it? We'll be right back.
You and I disagree on this one. It's corner.
Okay.
I'm not. And what I will say is, you can get away with corner if your safeties are really, really good. And thankfully, because that's what people will point to, is like Green Bay's overall PFF coverage grade or their overall pass defense. And that's all real and good and factual. And you have the best blitzing linebacker in the world. I really, truly think that. And Edger and Cooper, even just going into year two, like, I don't think there's an off ball guy that affects the quarterback to the level that Edger and Cooper can and will. I think if you listen to Justice, like, Rebrovich was a war criminal, basically. Like, they just, and so if Covington can, there's talent, obviously, right? You've got Sorrell, and then that's being put into a potential year three jump from LVN, a potential return to form for Rashawn Gary, second year now with his hand in the dirt, right? And going back to that. And obviously Anagbare Cox, all of that. And then you've got real legitimate, at least two legitimate, and I would say three guys that have shown they can interior rush. And Carl Brooks being, at least as a rookie, about as successful as you'd ever want an interior rusher to be. And then Wyatt and Clark, if Clark's injury deal was real, like, that's real interior pass rush. So all those caveats aside, being that you kind of can get away with it, this is still a division. Now, with DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, Luther Burden, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, I can keep going in it. By the way, in a conference where you're going to have to go through Devonta Smith and AJ Brown. And I mean, I could keep going. Like, it's dudes, right? And yes, you can go zone heavy and you can explain it all away. I get it. And how successful they were last year. And you hope the pass rush comes. It's third and eight, or it's fourth and six, and you can win the game. You got Keyshawn out there on Justin Jefferson. Like, I'm not excited. I'm not confident. You got Javon Bullard in the slot against Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't love that. And I just thought it was very clear from the beginning that they were not going to go with Jair moving forward. You were on the same page. And they don't, to me, I truly don't think they have even a B-level corner on the roster. Maybe Hobbs. I think there's a chance maybe they've got three C-plus guys or three C guys, and you go, okay, and people talk about cornerback being a weak link position. I mean, if it's Bullard, he just was one last year, right? I don't think they've struggled at slot like Keyshawn, and it's a small sample size. Keyshawn was not a good nickel. He was actually functional on the outside. So yep. If you can extrapolate that sample size, I'll leave him alone because I've been kind of rough on Keyshawn, and I think if he really is that, and part of that could just be Jeff Hafley, part of his success could just be Hafley putting him in because he doesn't turn well. He's a straight line speed guy. That's why he's an unbelievable kick returner. What yep. Keyshawn kick return do you remember where he's like giving guys the sauce? He doesn't have loose hips. He's not a wiggle guy. He's a straight line edge, like angle erasing dude that they put at nickel. The like physical attributes never made sense. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you need a dude. And Ja, when he was healthy before he broke his shoulder, was a dude. And they didn't even attempt to do that. Now, building a perfect roster is impossible. It just is. You got to make concessions somewhere. It's just not the place I would ever do it. For me, I'm so old, not even old school. I'm sort of old new school in that passers, pass rushers, pass defenders, pass catchers. And I understand Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley, and you know that's who won the Super Bowl. And man, go look at the last 15 Super Bowls and what wins it: passers, pass rushers, pass blockers. I mean, that's sort of where Green Bay, I think, went heavy, right? Where
yep,
you could be in a situation where your second round pick this year and your first round pick last year don't even start. You could, because if Ryan wins the right guard job and Sheed wins the left tackle job, Belton and Morgan are just on the bench.
Yep.
And I don't know if you knew this, but they actually could have taken Cooper DeJean last year.
Had not heard that.
I'm sort of joking, but like there could be guys, whether it's Cooper DeJean or whoever, there could be guys playing 800 snaps on the defense, and instead you've got a backup left tackle. And that backup left tackle could come in huge someday. But that is a place at corner that is a premium position that, by the way, Brian has identified as a premium position. Took Stokes, took Ja, took Josh Jackson. He gets that it's important, except right now he doesn't. So that's where my struggle is.
I think he still views it as important. I just think he's higher on Nixon, Hobbs, and Valentine than I think a lot of people are. And I totally get the disconnect there, meaning I'm not sure I'm as high on those three as Brian Gutekunst is, but he's kind of told us over and over they think really very highly of those three. And they've kind of backed it up with actions by only taking corners in the seventh round and not really doing anything to add to that group this offseason. So we'll see if they're right or not. I think that's a totally different conversation, but I just think he likes those three for better or worse. Now, it's part of what you're saying is the reason I made the case for if Jalen Ramsey does get cut, why I would be interested. And one of the main things I just kind of want to go over there is, A, it gives you a different level of player, a different piece to kind of be able to match up in some unique circumstances. But more importantly, every other position on this team has a potential upside play. Jordan Love at quarterback, Josh Jacobs at running back, a variety of different wide receivers, Tucker Kraft at tight end, Zach Tom on the offensive line. We can go on and on. Rashawn Gary as a defensive end, Edge Cooper at linebacker, Xavier McKinney at safety. There's a potential stud. I'm not saying they're a stud now, but there's a potential stud in every single one of those rooms, except for corner. I think as much as I still like the three guys that are there, I couldn't make an argument for like the odds of any of them making a Pro Bowl or being that level of player this upcoming season. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope I'm surprised by that. But adding a piece, whether it was, again, Jaire Alexander coming back and just praying he stays healthy, or somebody like a Jalen Ramsey, just having a different level of player there that gives you a little bit more of that upside, I think does give you a little bit more of a puncher's chance in some of those situations and scenarios against the Jeffersons, the AJ Browns, etc., which I do think can be valuable. So I don't necessarily fully disagree with you. I'm probably a little bit higher on the trio that they have than maybe most, but I do still think that there's an avenue there, and there would have been an avenue there to improve that group, make it a little bit deeper, and give it a little bit higher of a ceiling.
I agree. And I do like Valentine. I think you and I agree on Valentine, and I don't even know how far we are off on Hobbs.
Sure.
He also has injury concerns, man, which yep. brings up the depth issue that, you know, I think you just have to be super uncomfortable with, despite, and I know we're going to talk about this, the two 2023 corners that I really like, they haven't done it on an NFL field. And by the way, like a bunch of two really smart franchises gave up on both of them.
Yeah.
Now you're not ideal.
You're totally right. So let's go through those two corners, Kamal Haddon and Kalen King. I know you had, again, mid-round grades on both of them. You liked both of them coming out of college. Like you said, have proved absolutely nothing in the NFL. KC gave up on a sixth-round pick after, like, I think it was 20 or 30 preseason snaps last year. Kalen King got cut by the Packers this past year. So how are we supposed to feel about those guys potentially being next guys up at corner 4 and 5?
Well, yeah, so I'll start with Haddon. Haddon, I thought, was, and he's unique. The Packers, it's funny, the Chandon Sullivan of it all kind of broke me. And part of that, too, is like, what's the last championship you saw? Maybe the best nickel of all time, right? You have Charles Woodson, maybe the best nickel season of all time in 2009, and yep. then winning a championship in 2010, and all of the emphasis that was obviously put on that position by having a first ballot Hall of Famer play it. But then you have like aging Tremont Williams in the slot. Then you have Chandon Sullivan in the slot. Then you have Keyshawn Nixon in the slot. And it's like, I'm just watching poor slot play drive me insane for however long. Now they've built the whole plane out of slot corners, it seems like, because that's Nate Hobbs's natural position. I don't think it's Keyshawn Nixon's natural position, but it's certainly his most snapped position is slot. They're going to play Javon Bullard there. And I think there's a world where I would play Carrington Valentine, but last season it seemed like they were terrified of playing Carrington Valentine, throwing the withering husk of Eric Stokes out there instead of him.
Yeah.
And your starters could be basically three slot corners in Keyshawn Nixon and Javon Bullard inside with Hobbs on the other side. I don't know that that's what I actually believe that they'll do, but I think it's on the table. Apart from that, you do have Carrington Valentine, who they shouldn't play inside and they view as a true outside corner. And then the next true outside corner I would view as Kamal Haddon. Haddon's a guy, and this is almost, I don't know, damning with faint praise, but I thought he could be a really good zone corner, really good outside zone corner. He's got good size. He can tackle. If you're going to run outside runs and have him be the contained player, he can do some of that. I think he had decent enough route recognition, decent enough ball production, decent enough eyes. He just doesn't move side to side super well. And he's kind of a straight line athlete, bigger, thicker physical corner, but not a man corner and not a nickel. But I still thought he could play defensive football in the NFL. And you start to get into grading like that. Well, that's a fifth round pick. If you actually think a guy can play on defense, you need to give a fifth round pick or higher, because sixth and seventh round grades are basically, I think this guy is going to play special teams. And I think Kamal Haddon could be a real actual defensive number two outside. Like, you wouldn't want him as your top corner, but I thought he could maybe be a number two outside corner in a zone heavy scheme. And the whole league is a zone heavy scheme, so I wasn't too terribly worried about it. The one that I liked was Kalen King, who, you know, Kalen was a projected top 25 pick after a really, really good season at Penn State. Did not end up being the athlete, and then really, really struggled. I think in his sophomore year was really good, and then his junior year before he came out was poor. Got absolutely run off the field by Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State in a big, big matchup, and just sort of got exposed. And then there were athletic limitations, but his feel for the game, his instincts, and most importantly, his sophomore year ball production, which was just elite in an elite conference. I just think he's and this is unfortunate, I think he's a starting nickel in the, at least that was my grade. I thought he could be a starting nickel in the NFL. You protect him by not really having him run downfield with anybody long-term so he doesn't get cooked, and you protect him as a nickel corner. Not that there aren't defensive calls where the nickel does have deep responsibilities, but most of the time he doesn't. Most of the time you've got at least one, if not two, safeties behind him, or you're playing cover four in a shell and he's got the flat. It's not a position where you have to be obsessed about deep speed or, you know, super athleticism, but man, if you can run into five picks a year, you're a Pro Bowler, right? And that was like the number of PBUs, the number of tip balls, and the number of interceptions that year before he got drafted. I only dropped him to the third round. Obviously, the league dropped him to the seventh. So the league was not great. And then, like you said, you got Jeff Hafley and Brian Gutekunst, and then Spags and Andy giving up on Haddon and King. That's not great, but also that's just kind of the way the league goes, right? And not everybody has a straight path to stardom. And I don't know that either of these two guys could, you know, be stars, but I thought both could maybe help. As you said, though, the problem is I don't think even the 95th percentile, either of them are Pro Bowlers. And that's where you do want to invest a top 60 pick in a corner, because Josh Jackson doesn't work out, but his like best outcome was probably a Pro Bowl with his, you know, his yep. athleticism and his, and it just didn't go well for him. I thought the Packers did him dirty by moving him inside when that made absolutely no sense ever. But ultimately it probably wasn't going to work out no matter the coaching, no matter the system, whatever. It just wasn't a good pick, and those happen, man. But I think these guys can be real NFL players. I don't know if any of them's a dude, and it's fun to have a dude at corner. That's a fun, good thing. And I mean, it's funny. People talk about the Belton pick and the Morgan pick and all these things and say, look at the Eagles, man. Look at what they did. Look at build up like the Eagles. Guys, the Eagles grabbed the guy's escaping me, the right guard.
Quinion Mitchell. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to talk corner. No. Right guard. Oh, sorry. I know they got him like in the middle of nowhere. Mekhi Becton at right guard.
Yeah, Becton. I'm like, the Eagles just threw Becton at right guard, used the top pick on Quinion, and then traded up to get Cooper DeJean. They had like the draft that I wanted. And not that it's like, oh, Ross is so smart. Like, they went and got the two corners that I was obsessed with. Quinion Mitchell on the outside, Cooper DeJean on the inside, and Cooper had a pick six in the Super Bowl. Build like the Eagles is actually not necessarily obsessed. Now, have they nailed picks up front? Hell yeah. But this sort of punting corner and it's like the Eagles. No, it's not. They just used two top 50 picks on corners, and they both started and both excelled in the Super Bowl. And now they have a potential all-pro nickel in DeJean, and a potential, I think, Pro Bowl level outside corner in Quinion. I don't know if Quinion will ever be like, you know, one of the top dudes on the outside. He's good. Really, really good, man. And they don't have to help either of those guys. And it opens up so much of what they want to do, because you're not worried about the who was ever covered in the slot, and you're not necessarily worried about the other team's top receiver, because Quinion Mitchell's already at that level.
We'll be right back. When Green Bay won a Super Bowl last, the secondary, like, used to have Charles Woodson, but also Tremont Williams, Sam Shields, pretty darn good. Now, Sam Shields going into that 2010 season, undrafted free agent, unknown guy. Maybe Green Bay can unearth something in one of these guys that we're not expecting, like Sam Shields was that year going in. And they had a Charlie Pepper at safety. Now, granted, they had a Nick Collins at safety too, but they had a Charlie Pepper at safety that there was a lot of concerns over.
They weren't supposed to, but yes.
Yes, true. So again, there are situations where you have to kind of navigate some weaknesses on the team, and you have to find a way to make through it. And hopefully Green Bay can do that. But I do agree with you from an upside standpoint at corner. I think there's a concern. And I think from a depth standpoint at corner, there's some concern. I know you made an argument, or at least a little bit of an argument on social media, for maybe picking up Rasul Douglas as just like a, at this point, who cares? Throw him at the outside, see if he's got anything left, sort of transaction. You know, kind of walk me through your thinking there.
Yeah, and I understand the pushback on that a little bit. I mean, I just have such concern about like outside corner. And yes, I know I've talked about the slot and all those things, but from a depth standpoint, and even from a starting standpoint, now the problem is they're not going to bench enough guys. Probably, I don't think to start. I guess you could start. I think I'm rambling a little bit here, but my favorite corner is Carrington Valentine. Literally, my favorite corner on the team right now is Carrington Valentine. I don't know if they feel that way. The problem is if you sign Rasul Douglas, the kid that's getting benched is Carrington, because they aren't benching Nixon, and they darn sure aren't benching Hobbs.
Nope.
So that's who's going to lose the playing time is Valentine.
Correct.
And that part of it's tough, but when you're my whole point is, like, when your next true outside cornerback, which, guys, on a normal down, you have two outside cornerbacks and no nickel. And then on a sub down, which I guess is actually the real normal, you still have two outside cornerbacks in one slot, and they've got depth for days in the slot. Nixon, Hobbs, you know, and obviously Bullard. But I would just like another body like Rasul's. Now, you know, there's been studies that the witching hour for corners is actually like 28 and not 30. And Sewell's on the other side of that. He wasn't good last year in Buffalo. He's not going to play special teams for you. I mean, I understand all of those things. I do. And that's where you got to really feel good about Bo Melton on special teams. You got to really feel good that Carrington Valentine will play special teams. You got to be really excited about, you know, Colin Oliver and Baron Sorrell, and you just got to feel really good about your special teams unit if you're going to load your cornerback room up with vets that won't play specials. And I don't know that they can't use Nixon on coverage units, but they haven't been and probably won't. You know, I don't know that they're going to have Nixon run down. So that's where the struggle is. I think that there's at least a 50th percentile chance that Sewell would end up being one of your best three corners. And I think he would give you a fighting chance against some of these like dudes, because carrying that's the other thing, is just a physicality thing. It's hard to forget Carrington Valentine getting just run through by Dallas Goedert. Not every team's going to tight end screen you like that and get guys out on the edge. But you just think about some of the guys that I've talked about and their physical abilities, their physical just size and the way that they do things. And you are in Marvin Harrison Jr.'s conference. You are in A.J. Brown's conference. You are in Justin Jefferson's conference. Like, there are large humans. And I don't know that the Packers have one guy that I like as a physical corner. It's not Nixon. It's not really Hobbs. Nope. And while Carrington Valentine has the length, we know he doesn't have the weight in the seat of his pants to kind of bump with guys like that. So just a different body type. But I understand like all of the detractions from that, as far as no special teams, older than 28, didn't play well last year. Why would it get better this year? I get all that. I do.
If it's a 1 year vet minimum, try him out in training camp sort of thing and see how he looks. I obviously probably a little bit more than that, but I'm
price has to be going down every day. The price has to be going down every day.
You would think so. And again, the Green Bay's had success revitalizing him once, and maybe they can do it twice. So again, if it's something cheap, go for it. There's no harm, no foul. I think anything more than that, I'm willing to wait and see a little bit more, see what King Haddon, Micah Robinson, those guys can do, see what the starters look like. And then if you're starting to get a little bit anxious and worried, all right, then maybe take a flyer on them and kind of go from there. And before we get you out of here, let's end on a positive note. I asked you what you were maybe most disappointed by, or maybe the biggest Packers mistake of the offseason. What are you most excited about? What gives you a lot of confidence in a move that they made this offseason?
I don't know if it's necessarily a move that they made this offseason, but it has to go back to the beginning of the show. In the Watson part of things, because this offense, I think, finished third last year in passing DVOA, despite everybody saying that they, you know, making fun of the 4WR1s thing, talking about how they have no weapons, this, that, and the other. Jordan Love's playing on one leg. Okay, Jordan Love played on one leg. They led the league in drops and apparently have no good players, and they finished third in passing DVOA. Pretty freaking good. Okay, yep. They're in the top 10% of the league. In a passing league, again, I get it. Now, the Packers don't even know it's a passing league because they handed off to Josh Jacobs so much. But, like, yes, I saw the Saquon Super Bowl. I understand all that. By and large, over the last 20 years, it is still a passing league, and they could have a truly, truly elite, if things go well, passing offense. You get the Twin Towers back at tight end, and injuries are going to make something bad happen, I'm sure. But, boy, you talk about having an X like Christian Watson, two tight ends like Musgrave and Kraft, a slot like Jaden Reed, and a Z like Matthew Golden. And we're not even talking about the upside and potential ability of a Marshawn Lloyd out of the backfield. We haven't spoken Romeo Dobbs's name. We haven't even talked about Dontavian Wicks, who is one of the best separators in the National Football League, period. One of the wide receivers with the most upside in the league, just needs to catch the football. We're not even talking about Dobbs and Wicks and Marshawn Lloyd and what they can do. This could be a truly elite offense. Now, so many things have to go well right? Like Watson has to come back and be himself. Golden has to hit immediately. And then there's the whole Savion Williams part of it. Like there could be so many different ways that this offense could come at you. I don't think people understand truly how special it could be because there's not the name recognition that a Jefferson or an Amon-Ra St. Brown or whatever have, but just the way these pieces could work and the different ways you could come at folks from a formation standpoint and from a personnel standpoint. I mean, they're eight deep. When I say weapons, they're eight or nine deep at just weapon.
Yep.
You're not ready for Marshawn Lloyd. You're not ready for Josh Jacobs. Oh, Musgrave just got one-on-one with your Sam linebacker who can't run and just caught a 30-yarder in the seam. Tucker Kraft just ran over your free safety. Christian Watson just ran by your free safety. Like, there are so many different things that could happen and that the Packers can create matchup problems with, by the way, a pretty darn good offense. Like, go back and watch that team in Brazil and then look at what the Eagles did to everybody else. I get that they lost the game, but go watch how many explosives the Packers created against the Super Bowl champions. Like, they're closer than people realize. I think Halfley can kind of just hold things together. Maybe they can be great. I don't know. But with Jordan Love looking as good as you say he has in OTAs and what they actually have, I just think last year's offense was better than people understand, and this year's offense has a chance to really do something special.
I'm right there with you. I can't wait for it. I think it's always good philosophy just to give Matt LaFleur a lot of toys to play with, and he has a lot of toys to play with and can mix and match in a ton of different ways. And like you said, some things have to hit and go right and stay healthy and all those sort of things. But if it does, I do think it can be a very, very fun offense. Just to wrap things up from before, Adrian Peterson was, in fact, the last running back to win an MVP in 2012. Prior to that, LT in 2006, Sean Alexander in 2005, Marshall Faulk in 2000, TD in 98, and Barry Sanders, the one I mentioned, in 97.
Oh, I set my cutoff at 20 years.
There you go. That's a pretty good. We did have Emmitt Smith and Thurman Thomas before that as well. A couple other good running backs in their time also. Ross, I cannot thank you enough. What do you got cooking at Packer Reports, Packer Day Podcast? Anything you got coming up?
Yeah, still covering on recording on Mondays, coming out on Tuesdays on the Packaday podcast. We've still got the team rocking through stuff. Mark Eccles got some really cool VIP things coming from, you know, he still has sources in the league. And that's some of the really fun stuff for me to read is what people that are actually in the NFL think of what Green Bay is doing. He just had a piece come out about how much an opposing scout loves Green Bay's offensive line. And that's worth a read. As are, you know, in my opinion, all the things we do over at Pack Report. And I hope to kind of maybe ramp up the writing side for myself, doing a lot of video, doing a lot of podcasts lately. Obviously, the daily draft was quite the undertaking. But as camp approaches, you know, you even wrote something with the Jair thing. Yeah, that was something. So maybe we'll get back to some writing.
It was a stunning turn of events. Did not see that coming. Just had an inkling out of nowhere to write that whole Jair thing up. And I enjoyed doing it. So like you say, you never know when that, that desire is going to hit, I guess. Ross, I cannot thank you enough for all the work that you do for hopping on today. Packaday podcast, everything you do, just covering the team at Pack Report as well. You do a tremendous job. Make sure to follow him over on social media at Ross Uglum. And of course, check out everything at PackerReport.com. That's going to do it for Ross and I today. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL on the podcast at Packaday Podcast. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.